Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Follow Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
Update from One Bills Drive. Bills practice is over for the day. They practice inside New Era Field. Shaq Lawson did not practice, has not practiced all week with his hamstring. Cornerback Taron Johnson, no practice today with his shoulder. And wide receiver Ray McLeod limited in practice. The Bills working through some numbers at cornerback. Vontae Davis is going to play on Sunday, according to Sean McDermott. He was inactive last Sunday, giving the Bills four healthy corners. We'll see how they line up. Bills and the Los Angeles Chargers, Sunday, 1 o'clock. The game right here on our flagship in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550. Aaron Rodgers, still a question mark as to his availability for the Green Bay Packers game Sunday against Minnesota. Packers coach Mike McCarthy told reporters that Rodgers remains day-to-day as he recovers from a knee sprain. No practice today for the Packers. They will be back on the practice field tomorrow. Andy Dalton threw four touchdown passes last night, 3 to A.J. Green, as the Bengals beat the Baltimore Ravens 34-23, leaving the Bengals alone on top of the AFC North at 2-0. The Ravens dropped to 1-1. Linebacker Michael Kendricks, released by the Browns following charges of insider trading, going to sign a one-year deal with the Seattle Seahawks, according to ESPN. He pleaded guilty last week to the charges. He'll be sentenced in January. Kendricks used tip from an acquaintance to make about $1.2 million in illegal profits on four major trading deals. The Dolphins have lost guard Josh Sitton for the season. He tore his rotator cuff last week. He is out. He goes on injured reserve. They'll make a corresponding move before Sunday's game against the Jets. Veteran guard Ted Larson scheduled to step into the starting lineup in Sitton's place. Buffalo Sabres on the ice for the first time today in their 2018 training camp. Back on the ice tomorrow. The practices continue through the weekend at Harbor Center. Sessions tomorrow begin at 9:45 in the morning. On Sunday, there's a scrimmage that starts at 10:30. The Sabres' first preseason game is Monday night in Columbus against the Blue Jackets. And Red Wings captain Henrik Zetterberg's back injury is ending his hockey career. He is 37 years old. That is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker, One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. And it's time to talk to our man, Lorenzo Alexander. Why do you guys laugh? It's your theme song now. We've made it.
I love that song.
Whether you wanted it or not, you have a theme song now, Lorenzo.
It's thrown on me now.
I love it, man.
Yep. The Lowdown with Lorenzo Alexander, our regular Friday feature. He is in studio with us. Welcome, Lorenzo. Good to have you here.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's always a pleasure to come in studio with you guys and hang out a little bit, talk some ball.
Yesterday I was saying, hey, I'm going to watch that game last night between Baltimore and Cincinnati because, you know, if Baltimore comes out and plays like gangbusters, I'm going to feel good about it because, you know, they are that good.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched it last night, and I thought, man, I even feel better about it now because it's a week-to-week league. You play good one week, you're bad that next week. You play bad, you can play good the next week. And right. I know that's true.
Right, yeah, you've experienced that. And, I mean, and I've experienced it throughout my career. I mean, even looking at last year, I mean, we started off hot, had a horrible three games, and then came back and finished strong. So that's what the message is and what it has been all week. Trying to compartmentalize that effort and performance that we put out and leave it in last week and really come out strong. For me, in my mindset, and this the message this week is starting fast. If I think about our four preseason games, including this last, the opener in Baltimore, we haven't been able to come out fast in that first initial drive, offense or defense, and really establish the momentum and the dominance that we're about to play you guys for the next four quarters. And so that's what we need to be able to do this week, I think, to really put ourselves in a position where we can actually have a chance to win the game at the end of the game.
Hey, Lorenzo, yeah. as a veteran, as a captain, as a leader, what did you take on your shoulders this week coming to work on Monday to try to put last week behind you? And how did you, you know, practically speaking, how did you make that happen during the course of the
week? I mean, well, you still approach it as the same week. I'm still going business as usual. I'm not coming here with my head down or trying to change anything up or with the panic in my voice or my actions. Because when you panic and people look at you as a leader, and I think Leslie Frazier does a great job of this, especially in game, you don't want to create chaos around you, because if the leader's panicking, oh my God, it must be something really wrong here.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, you stay course, put things in perspective. It was the first game. We didn't perform well at all. It was very disappointing, But it was one game. You have to take it like that. And I know it's cliche and people hate hearing it, but that's the – and what Tash just referred to, that's the beauty of the NFL. It's a week-to-week league. And good or bad, that next week, it's a whole new week, and you can really go out there and redefine who you are and grow on good performances and change bad performances.
Yeah, and I was telling Murph this early in the day. I remember getting embarrassed on a Monday night game and other games as well. There's nothing that motivates you like not wanting to go through that again.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, you guys showed up probably on Monday, Tuesday, and you're kind of looking around that locker room saying, "Hey, not this week."
Right, it's time to go. Obviously, we all want to get this taste out of our mouths, and the only way we can do it is going out there and doing it. You know, I'm a leader, but I'm not a big guy on talking and yapping and trying to, you know, snot bubbles and tears. I'm going to lead you to the water. This is what we need to do. This is what it needs to look like. But at the end of the day, every man on our football team, whether you're a practice squad guy or the star player, you need to bow up this week, get ready, be a man, prepare, and then we need to go out on Sunday and hit these guys in the mouth as soon as this first kickoff snap is taken and not wait for somebody else. Sometimes you get caught, is Jerry going to make a play? Is Shady going to make a play? No, I'm right. going to be the guy to make the play.
Yeah, and there is an emotional impact to it, though. I mean, it is about getting your work done, showing up with a new attitude and saying, all right, buckling down, because the games are won Monday through Saturday.
Right.
You know, Sunday just tells you what it is. But this is opening day.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever been able to relate to some of your teammates about what it's like to walk out the tunnel on opening day in the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, at home, I mean, I think there's nothing like coming out, you know, obviously in New Era Stadium. I mean, the Bills, Mafia, that whole fandom, that group is there's nothing else like it. So it's even hard to describe. They've gotten a little taste of it, mm-hmm. but they won't really get the full effect until you walk out of there and you see 70,000 crazy fans, you know, screaming and yelling. Now it's our turn to go put on a show for them and keep that energy going throughout the entire game.
Hey, Lorenzo, Sean McDermott spoke this morning about getting his leadership council, he called it, together and talking about this week and responding to last week. What is that leadership council? And you don't have to give me a, you know,
right. I mean,
what did you guys talk about it?
It's guys that he's identified, you know, because captains is voted on players, but this leadership council are men that he's identified as leaders in probably each position group for the most part. And you're not necessarily a captain to be on it because sometimes a captaincy can be a popularity contest. And he comes to us and just to get a vibe and a feel for the locker room. Are there any concerns or is there anything that he can do better? And different things like that has taken place, you know, since I've been here with him going back to last year. So we'll talk about various things. So there was nothing, obviously we didn't want to play the way, but he just wanted to make sure, is there anything, did you guys sense anything leading up that I can maybe change or speak to or that we can do better as leaders on the team so that we don't have the same performances last week?
Speaking of sensing things coming up, I know you're doing more than just sensing what the Chargers have on their side of the ball. Phillip Rivers, guys, they got some guys. Talk about, you know, facing one of the all-time great throwers. I mean, he's really good.
Phillip Rivers, and I think this is why Bills Mafia is going to be so important this week, especially on third downs, really every down, because he is the offensive coordinator, and he takes the play clock down to almost – you know, it says 3 seconds, but it's almost running out each and every time because he feels that he's been in the league long enough and has the ability to get his line lined up, diagnose whether we're blitzing, what type of coverage we're in. He's calling out all types of calls and has all these type of words. So that's why this week, when we keep that crowd noise and we're out there playing well, that juice is flowing, he's going to have a hard time getting his line set up or maybe audible into a screen because he sees us doing something. But he has that ability. He's done it at a high level. I'm watching the game last week versus Kansas City. D Ford is destroying everything in front of him. And I think they only come up with one sack in that game because he knows where to get the ball out. He's quick with it. But I do know one thing. He's going to take about 4 or 5 shots down the field to Benjamin.
Right.
So we have to eliminate that and not allow that to happen. And then also, obviously, Keenan Allen, another Golden Bear out there balling, that we're going to have to make sure we keep our eyes on him, number 13, because he's been wrecking shop since he's gotten into the league.
He does have talent around him, and he spreads it around, right? I mean, everybody contributed.
Right, yeah, you got Keenan, you got Benjamin, who I'm not sure is going to play. I heard he was in a boot. You got Gordon, you got Eckler, number 30,
yeah.
young running back. And then they got Gates back now, so definitely down the red zone. So he definitely has guys. But his biggest thing is diagnosing it, taking the shots, and then he's not going to take a sack. he's dishing it out. I mean, like I said, I mean, guys are beating him left and right, and he just knows where to go with the ball immediately. So now instead of being, you know, second in maybe 15, they're second in six, which is a very manageable down, and they still have everything in their playbook that's accessible to them. So we have to make sure that we minimize those, make sure we tackle the check downs and don't allow those to turn to explosive.
It's amazing, too. He never gets sacked, and really he doesn't run.
No.
So I told Murph this. Him not getting sacked is more about him than it is about his offensive line or the rush packages or anything like that. It's him.
It is him. It's all him. I mean, guys were getting – I'm literally getting beat left and right. I mean, off the ball, beeline, but he knows where his check down. Even though they love shots, they always put an outlet pass either right there in front of him, maybe like a shallow crosser. When they're going all going, that's three receivers going deep. He always has somebody he knows where to dump it, or he'll just throw it at the running back's feet or, you know, whatever, just to get rid of it. But he's not going to allow negative plays at all unless it's like a got-to-have-it type of situation.
You know, it's weird, too. They scored 28 points last week, which is a lot, but their points don't match up with their offensive production sometimes. I read something where last season they were the fourth best offense, you know, yards,
right,
but down in towards the middle in points scored. So do they stall in the red zone typically, or what happens?
At times, but I mean, I don't know what the sense of that is. So, I mean, for us, we need to bow up in the red zone. I haven't really seen that because it's only been one game. It's not like I went back and looked at last year and saw what their issues were. But they're dynamic in the red zone. What we do know is in those situations, they're looking for 13. So I think teams tend to take him away, and then their line maybe gets beat. So now he's forced to either throw it away or throw a quick check down where guys can maybe come up and tackle him.
Right. With Lorenzo Alexander, Bills linebacker, the lowdown every Friday at this time. Let's back away from the Bills Chargers for a minute. Yesterday, Lorenzo, we got word while we were on the air that our buddy Steve here is one of 102 modern-era nominees for the Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2019. You got right on it last night with a tweet. You had a tweet that went out about Steve and his chances. You're trying to campaign for him.
Yeah,
a little bit, right?
I am. You know, when you know people that are in that room and making calls, you know, so I hit my boy Jim Trotter up on Twitter because I know he's one of the voters. I said, man, you got to get on the calls, or get on some calls for our special teams guys. Brian Mitchell's another guy that's on there. Obviously, Steve Tasker, guys that are both deserving of being in the Hall of Fame. I was like, man, you got to stay on the table for my guys. So start the campaign now. Let me know what I need to do.
All I can say, Lowe, is good luck.
hey, I know you're not going to toot your own horn, but I'm knocking down the door for it. Because we got to have more teams, guys. They say it's a third of the game, but they never honor those guys that were dominant during their tenure there.
I appreciate it. But I told Murph this yesterday. Brian Mitchell is a guy that, I mean, I've heard about him the last year or so. That guy was his for
purpose.
Real.
Yeah.
You look at, and at one point, and I don't know if it's still this way, NFL statistic book, all the guys with the most yards are the quarterback. You know, like Peyton Manning was 70,000, and he goes all these guys down through all those quarterbacks. The first guy in the list who's not a quarterback is Brian Mitchell.
Mitchell, right, yeah.
That's big.
Right.
You know, I think that's significant. And I think, you know, for a guy like him, because he's a kick returner mostly, and a running back and a receiver, he did all-purpose yards.
Right.
He punt return, kick return, and he played forever, and he was very good. That, to me, is impossible to ignore. And you know, and now it's the last year or two is the first time I've ever heard of him actually getting mentioned, let alone nominated.
Well, they have to. I mean, if they're going to let guys like Hester and some of these other guys now that are just strictly returners in, B. Mitch has to be one of those guys that need to in because he was a game changer, too, big-time touchdown.
If the Hall of Fame – I mean, certainly there's a lot of dangerous guys out there, but if the Hall of Fame is for a body of work, I mean, look at that. I mean, that's pretty amazing.
And that's why I'm knocking down the door for guys like that.
Why is there a bias against special teamers, you think?
They just don't feel like they have an impact – on the outcome of a game, which is ludicrous to me. It doesn't make sense because field position is such an integral part of it. And when you have guys screaming down, you have to count for guys, double team them, triple team them, try to trap them, try to fool them. If you have to game plan for somebody, which I know they have to do for Steve and other guys that have played special teams in this league, I think you are a dominant force and that's what your role was and what you were asked to do. You should be considered for the Hall because you did your group at the elitist level possible. Now, they just feel like, for whatever reason, it's not an impact.
Well, it's a tough sell for the old-timers, too, even for the Veterans Committee, because a lot of the veterans, when they played, the rosters were only 36, 42 guys. And they didn't have hardcore special teams guys because they were always – starters were playing special teams. And for that reason, they feel like it was a throwaway down. That was when they could get a break, you know, from playing offense and defense or whatever. And when the rosters started to expand – particularly when they expanded and then before the salary cap came into play, it was really a golden era of special teams, because then it was a it really was a third of the game, because you had guys who were professional special teams players. Because there's no salary cap. They kept these guys around strictly for that. The roster was big enough that they had room for those guys, because if they weren't playing offense and defense and the rosters were like 45 on game day, there was about eight guys on a team who didn't see the field on offense or defense. So they were strictly special, like me, stretched special teams guys.
Yeah,
so there was an era in there, but that's why it's a hard sell for special teams guys, because there's still that era of old-timer who, if you're playing special teams, because you just weren't good enough. You know, and there's no such thing as a professional special teams player unless you're a kicker punter.
Right.
So that was it's a tough sell, Murph.
Speaking of special teams, you got in on virtually half the plays on defense and about half the plays on teams last week.
That's because we punted a lot. Hopefully, we don't have to experience that, because I'm only on punt.
Just on punt, and 16 field goal block. Okay. And a couple of tackles on punt coverage, right?
Yeah, I had three last week. I love covering punts. So, obviously, kickoff now is almost a guaranteed touchback for the most part. So, I actually enjoy going down when I have an opportunity to make a big hit, a play, a turnover, something for our team, and also, obviously, creating great field position with flipping the field.
Yeah, it's huge. And that was, what'd you think of, did you have any kind of interaction with Bjorquez? I mean, you know, he never even strapped on a set of cleats in an NFL game. He had the one moment where the ball was pouring rain and the ball slipped through him. But other than that, he had a huge net average.
Yeah, I thought he did a great job, obviously. Right. Yeah, for obviously being out there for his first time, coming in literally the week of the first game, preparing, having to deal with Danny Crossman, which is no easy task in his mind. He just coaches guys hard. He coaches guys hard.
Some
he
wants guys the do right it, man. They coach him hard.
And that's why he's been in this league and been on this team and survived, four head coaches now or something like that?
He gets results.
He's one of the best in the league. So it's not a shot at him. It's just the dynamic of who he is as a football coach. I thought he did a great job. I haven't really got a chance to really talk to him and know him. Obviously, he's a young kid, and I'm an old vet, so I don't really get a chance to talk to him as much as I want to. But the times at lunch when I'm sitting down with some of the specialists, he seems really cool, really good dude. Has the funny thing about him, is the mustache that's on his face. We in team meetings, and he's introducing himself and is about to sit down, and then Juan, and do you have any Mexican or Hispanic in you?
His name's Bjorquez.
He is so culturally proud of who he is. Yeah. So anybody that comes in that looks like they could be related to Juan, he's like, "Are you related to me in some type of way?" So it's just real funny. And then I'm like, "Why did he ask him that?" And then you just see the thick stash on his face.
Yeah.
But great kid. Kind of quiet, but really like what he's going to bring to our team and his development this year.
The lowdown with Lorenzo Alexander. All right, so let's get to the lowdown. Your keys, and you already talked about it, a fast start is important. You're not just talking about, people think fast start, they got to put up a touchdown early. You need a fast start defensively too, right?
Yeah, both things. I mean, I thought last week we had our opportunities of getting off the field early. We led obviously like a second and
26.
20 conversion. The first play of the game, I should have finished better, should have had a strip sack. Later in that drive, I strip, but we're off sides. So just those type of plays that add up to changing the momentum and the dynamic of the game early. And then obviously offensively, you don't have to score the first time out, but getting the first couple of first downs, so that we're not playing backed up football all the time. And also getting some confidence. Okay, we moved the ball a couple of times, then let's come back and get some adjustments so that we can finish the next drive.
Maybe especially important at home where, the crowd saw what happened last week. You want to give them something to wipe last week out of
their memory. Yeah, definitely don't want to get booed at home. Right. That's the worst feeling ever. So, but just creating great chemistry and momentum early so you get in the flow of the game. You don't feel like you're just fighting this upfield battle. And then when that happens, you tend to trying to do too much. So we just want to get a nice flow, play good football early on, and then make our adjustments and our checks as we go, and then obviously finish the game strong and figure out a way to win. And at the end of the day, I don't care how many yards we give up or how many yards we gain. I just want a W in our column. And that's the ultimate goal. And I think people oftentimes get caught up in stats, but we want to try to figure out a way to win, get that nasty taste out of our mouth, and then that really creates great confidence, and you start seeing guys rise as you start winning games.
Lowdown number two, Lorenzo's key number two, prevent explosive plays. Travis Benjamin has that kind of potential.
Yeah.
Keenan Allen does as well.
So we have to have great awareness where those guys line up. Obviously, we understand the mindset of Phillip Rivers, where he's definitely a touchdown and check down style of quarterback. Everything that they line up with, like I mentioned earlier, is, you know, high sevens, 2-7 routes by a receiver, scissors where one and two are crossing deep post, a deep seven route. All go, as I mentioned earlier, three receivers going deep. So everything is built to go down the field, chunk plays, and we have to understand that. I think Micah and Jordan do a great job of understanding concepts and play deep to check down, and that's what we have to be able to do. And then, you know, Matt Milano, Tremaine coming down and tackling that check down, because guys like Gordon or whoever that ex-receiver is, they normally have some pretty good athletes that catch the ball and get some run after the catch.
Yeah, and then the last thing, of course, and you guys have been doing this really all week, is respond to adversity. Because every
– right.
No matter, even the Baltimore Ravens, I'll tell you, there were times in that game last week where it's like, we got to, you know, it's going to happen.
Yeah, it, I mean, it always happens. There are ebbs and flows in games, but you can't allow the negative to, like, oh, here we go again. Once you have that mindset and that seeps into your mind and you don't ever really express it to anybody because you don't want to know how they're feeling, you can't allow those thoughts. If you do, you have to check and reset yourself immediately. And that's something, again, an individual has to take responsibility of how they're coming out and how they're preparing themselves, because I don't know everything that's going through your mind and thinking, and I'm also trying to worry about myself. I can lead you. I can tell you what you should be thinking, how you should go, but we have to have a mindset collectively of regardless of what's happening, we're going to just blow stuff up and then move on to the next play and then get things correct when we have a chance to go to the sideline.
So how did you think Tremaine Edmonds did in his first NFL game?
I thought he did a solid job, you know, watching some of the things. Obviously, there's little things here and there that he's going to continue to want to work on and correct. You know, we had one set come out where we didn't work on the look, the personnel for the call that we got, and there was some hesitation, but, you know, guys helped him out. Hey, we're going to go rip, and then we got it. So he'll be more demonstrative and decisive as he gets more comfortable, but he did an excellent job, I feel, from start to finish. And obviously, he had a sack, forced fumble.
I think all in the same series.
He should have had an interception.
Yeah.
You know, so we gave him a hard time about that all week. So he's going to be a player in this league. Like I said, I mean, he's going to continue to grow, continue to get better, because he's still swimming a little bit, just because now from week to week we're changing stuff.
Sure.
So now, you know, our base fundamentals may be slightly different, tweaked on the opponent we're playing, but he's going to be great. He flies around. He's physical. He's mature. He doesn't allow stuff to continue to affect him if he does have a bad play. He's going to be one of the best. I can talk great things all day about him.
Right.
Steve's heard my rant earlier in the week. He sat through my rant when I started talking about how people this week, media, and even some of our callers, started to write the story of the 2018 Buffalo Bills, the obituary. And I'm like saying, what are you talking about? It's mid-September. There's 15 games left.
It's typical.
You can't tell the story this season.
It's typical of the NFL.
Yet.
Unlike, you know, NBA, and I think we were kind of talking about this, MLB, there's 16 games. So people live and die week to week because there's nothing in between. So their highs, when we win, they think Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And their lows, like, oh, man, we're trash. We can't do nothing right. Everybody needs to go.
And that's just the way it is. They're so passionate. The fans are so passionate about their team, particularly in this sport, because you are invested in so few opportunities.
Right.
They can't, and I told Murph this, you can't stand the pain when it goes wrong.
Yeah.
The fans can't stand it because they have to leave the room. You know, they have to go down, they got to go out in the tunnel. They got to go get something to eat. They got to leave the television set and go, because they're invested in it emotionally like no other sport.
Yeah, and I get it, because, and that's probably the worst type of pain that you can feel, because
you can't control it.
You have no input. You're not going out there rushing no passes. You're not catching no balls.
Right.
So it's like, oh, I love them so much, and I can't do nothing. So it's so frustrating, and I completely understand that, and that's why it's so important for this week, especially opening up in front of this crowd, that we give them something to cheer about and go home and start this next week to be proud about and happy about.
Did you see the campers already on one
Bill's drive? I already knew that. They always start filling up, coming out. Yeah,
it's
cool.
Good stuff.
One of these days I'm going to get over there and go hang out with some of these folks.
You should.
Yeah.
I think people like that. Thanks, Lorenzo. Great to see you.
Good seeing you, man.
I appreciate you guys.
Lorenzo Alexander with the Lowdown every Friday right about this time. We're coming back with more Steve and I. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker. We may get Steve Berline in here in the final half hour of the show. He is part of the broadcast crew for the NFL on CBS.
Here's how that works. I mean, they come in, the broadcast crew comes in, Steve Berline, Tom McCarthy. That's a crew I worked with for a year or two in the booth. We had a three-man booth together, so I know those guys really well. They're here in the building. They'll come in and they get access. They'll get to watch practice. Even though Friday practices are closed to the media, the network broadcast crew gets to go in and watch. and they can talk to guys. And, you know, they don't really interfere or anything, but if they know anybody on the coaching staff or whatever, they can say hi to those guys. The general manager sometimes will be out there, and they'll watch practice. Then they give the media relations crew with the Bills or the home team a list of guys they want to talk to as both coordinators, the head coach, a quarterback, you know, an offensive player, defensive player, man, a list of four or five guys plus the coaches. And then they'll sit down one-on-one with those guys. It'll be the, you know, play-by-play, usually the analyst, in this case Steve Berline. He'll sit down and ask him some pretty specific questions about what he saw on film and what they're going to do and what they think about this and that and the other. And that's why we're still waiting on Steve Berline to show up here to come on the radio with us, because they're still in those meetings after practice.
What would you get out of watching practice on Fridays when you were doing
You'll get some personnel combinations. I'll get a lot of really strong impressions. I remember, I'll never forget one time we were in the AFC Championship game. This is back in the day when Rex Ryan was with the Jets and Mark Sanchez was their quarterback. This is a long time ago, and Sanchez was rookie year or second year. And the Colts are in the championship game against the Jets in Indianapolis. And I'll never forget going to that Friday practice and watching it, Peyton Manning put his team through their Friday practice. When they took over on offense and Peyton Manning was the quarterback, the entire – it was an indoor facility, much like here at One Bills Drive. They got this big, they had a big field house in Indianapolis too. Place was dead silent. I mean dead. Completely silent. There was only one voice in the end. That means Tony Dungy, the head coach, everybody. There's nobody spoke a word except Peyton Manning. And he not only called the signals in the huddle and did all that, he also set the personnel for the defense. He goes, I want this personnel package on the defense. You go in there, you come out, you da, da, and then they'd show him the card. He'd run the play. And whenever they did an offensive series, an offensive period in that practice, that's the way it was.
Yeah.
I mean, he ran the practice from the quarterback spot. I mean, he called the plays. He called the personnel combinations on both sides of the ball. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah,
pretty impressive.
Hey, a couple of loose ends from Lorenzo Alexander's appearance. He talked about Travis Benjamin, and the Chargers are out with their injury report, which is interesting. Travis Benjamin, he's the former Cleveland Brown wide receiver specialist, a return specialist. He ran back punts a little bit last week, and he's very fast, good wide receiver. Travis Benjamin is questionable with that foot injury. Out for them, for the Chargers, is right tackle Joe Barksdale. He's had an injury. Also out, as you know, Joey Bosa will not play, and backup defensive back Craig Major is out. So their injury report is out. There's significant names there, Steve. They're starting right tackle. Yeah. Joey Bosa is out. And Travis Benjamin is questionable.
And Travis Benjamin had one carry for 19 yards last week. It was, and then he had one catch for 1 yard. So they use him sparingly. Didn't give him too many opportunities last week, but he was targeted 5 times in the passing game.
He's a threat. He's a deep threat.
Yeah, they're going to throw at him. I think when you talk about it, and Lorenzo Alexander said, you know, they anticipate Phillip Rivers going deep 4, 5, 6 times during the game, that which is a little bit more than once a quarter, probably 3 times a half. To go deep at least. And that's something quarterbacks like to do just to make sure the defense knows that they've got it in them and that keeps them honest.
Here's another leftover from Lorenzo's appearance. We talked about how Lorenzo was actively lobbying on Twitter for special teamers like Steve to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. The Bills have a number of players among the list of 102 nominees for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Modern era nominees for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Steve is one of them as a special teamer. Some of the others, former Bills nominees this year among the 102, linebacker London Fletcher, fullback Larry Centers, center Kent Hull, linebacker Cornelius Bennett, linebacker Chris Spielman, linebacker Takeo Spikes, linebacker Daryl Talley, and safety Troy Vincent. That's a good crew. Legitimate Hall of Fame chances there, Steve? You, of course, have a legitimate shot. Who would be the next likeliest guy in that group?
I think Cornelius Bennett is probably really? The one who had the most impressive career.
Spielman had a good
Spielman
career.
Spielman had a very good career.
Just a couple years here.
Just a few years here, although, you know, it was hard for him to get noticed nationally because he played in Detroit and they didn't, you know, they were never in the playoffs. Troy Vincent had a pretty impressive career and now is a vice president with the National Football League. Player safety. I'm not sure what his title is, but he was the guy that put together the entire summit for the new kickoff rules there in New York. So he's very well, very respected around the National Football League. So Troy Vincent there, and of course here in Buffalo, Kent Hull and Daryl Talley are two guys that I, you know, would personally, and Cornelius and Biscuit would, I would personally love to see any one of those three.
I'm thinking Talley and Bennett and Kent and you, I know you have been on this list before, right, the nominees?
Yes. Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's got to get to the next step. I think, what did we say, 18 finalists come up in December, and then it's voted on first week of February.
And they talk, what I've heard, Peter King, we have on the show once a week, he'll tell you about, they'll email and they'll chit-chat back and forth between guys around the country, but then when they all get together, separately they put their top guys in on a list, and then the results of that vote puts the final 18 together, and they start actually hashing it out pretty seriously after that.
Well, again, congratulations. We'll see how that works out. We've started the day, and we continue now talking a little bit about a lot about Sunday's game. And who are the two key players for the Bills in Sunday? We want you to pick one on offense, one on defense. The key, absolute key players. Steve and I both agreed that LeSean McCoy is probably the keyest guy on offense. You went with Micah Hyde. I go with Jordan Poyer. Essentially same thing on defense, because those safeties are going to have to play well for the Bills to come out of here with a victory. For a Buffalo victory, who holds the key? Give us one on offense, one on defense. Phone lines open, 803-0550 and toll free 1-888-550-2550. Call on the line from Joe in Lockport. Hi, Joe. Go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Yes, Mr. Tasker.
Yeah.
Question for you, sir.
Okay.
Why aren't you still playing?
Because I'm old.
With what we have right now, you can't do any worse. I mean, I know that you've gained a couple of years, but, I mean, you probably could outdo half of these rookies.
Well, from what they did last week, a lot of people are disgusted with how they looked last week, and not the least of which is the guys in the locker room and the coaching staff. They know they got to play better. I appreciate the sentiment, believe me, they're going to play much better this week. Still, even if they play way better than they did last week, there's no guarantee they're going to win this game. But certainly I would be shocked if they come out and lay an egg like they did on opening day.
Actually, my questions were, is this again another rebuilding year? And second is, when are they going to start drafting for an offensive line to protect our quarterbacks? Because apparently we've been going – actually, a couple years ago, we were number one. All of a sudden, now we've dropped, and the quarterbacks are taking such a beating that now they're going to start ailing. And for some reason, if he gets hurt, I'd rather actually have play now, jump him into the circus, let him play, and then if he gets hurt early, then at least he could rebound. But you keep going through this, and how much more can the offense and the fans take? We keep waiting for this and waiting for this.
Yeah. Well, they made the playoffs last year. They drafted an offensive lineman, a third-rounder last year, Deion Dawkins, who's a starter and a pretty good one. They drafted one this year as well. So they're trying. They're trying. We're going to break. Yep. We got Steve Berline standing by. He'll join us next. Come on back for that. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
WGR Sports Radio 550.
Welcome back. It's One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. It's the Friday before the home opener. The Bills have finished up practice at New Era Field, getting set now to kick it off 1 o'clock on Sunday. The Bills and the Los Angeles Chargers, the game televised by the NFL on CBS. Part of that broadcast crew in studio with us right now, John Murphy, Steve Tasker, joined by Steve Berline, longtime NFL quarterback. He'll work with Tom McCarthy on the broadcast. Welcome to Buffalo, Steve. You've been here before. You've done a lot of Bills games over the years.
I've done many Bills games over the year, and my good to be back in my old apartment here.
We stood beside each other in the booth for a handful of years. Yeah,
about 3 years, yeah. So we miss you, big boy.
Yeah, for most people in Buffalo that don't know this and haven't forgiven him, he was also Troy Aikman's backup in Super Bowl 26.
That's right.
I think we talked to you about that once.
I do have the ring if you
want
to see it.
Or was it 26 or 28? 26 or 28.
One of them. I don't know. Yeah. I can't remember which one it was.
26.
One in Rose Bowl, Pasadena.
27.
27.
You didn't bring the ring here this week.
I actually have it in my bag. Oh, okay. Yeah, if you want to see it.
Keep it there. That's fine.
It's unbelievable. Right? It's unbelievable.
All goes back to those.
Talk to us a little bit. You're prepping for this game. It was a disaster for the Bills in week one. Mm-hmm. And then, and for the Chargers, I mean, Phillip came out and could not have played much better, and they come away with a loss.
Yeah, he threw for 420-some yards and had three or four
drops.
More big plays dropped.
Yeah.
Two of them could have been more touchdowns for the Chargers. But he's going to bring his game. You know, he's going to show up, and he's going to be the coach on the field and always trying to get him in the right situation, the right play. It is what it is with Phillip Rivers. But I'm really excited to see your young guy go this weekend. I was hoping it wouldn't come around this early for his career development. I thought he'd benefit from sitting a little bit longer than week two. But selfishly, now that it's our game, it's a lot to talk about. It's going to be exciting to see how he does out there. And it seems like everybody really has seen a lot of very positive signs out of him. We were out of practice today. He moves really well. The ball comes out of his hand. Very, very nice. He can make all the throws. And he seems to have won everybody over to this point with his attitude. So it'll be exciting to see.
Yeah, but you know as well as I do, I mean, there are a lot of guys that look the part. And he does, yeah. Believe me, when you see him step out there and make all the throws. But so much about playing quarterback. I mean, you played for 17 years. So much of it is from the neck up.
There's no doubt. And that's, you know, I'm not sitting here saying that he's going to step on the field and take it over. Very few quarterbacks have been able to do that at this level. Dan Marino is the only one that really jumps out at me that from his rookie year came out ready to play. You can find examples of guys that had success in their first year, but they had really good teams around them if they were in that position. This situation with Josh, I think everybody would have loved to have had him have a little bit more time to develop and kind of learn and get comfortable. But, as Brian Daboll just told us in our meeting, he just said, it is what it is. I mean, we're in a situation where would it be great to have a veteran quarterback that maybe we could let ride this a little bit, or maybe someone for him to bounce ideas off of and support him from that position? Well, we don't have it. The bottom line is, here we are. He's a tremendous talent. We're going to bring him on and give him a chance to play and see what he can do. And there are going to be bumps in the road. They know that. Mm-hmm. And it's a matter of just not making those big mistakes that lose ball games.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too. No matter who that veteran might have been playing last week, if they play like they did last week, it doesn't matter who was ahead of him. It was time for him to play.
It was. And I wouldn't consider Nathan Peterman a veteran of, he's right. only made a few starts in his career. It's a very young quarterback room. And that's hard when you got to learn on the move like that as a young quarterback. But I know that the coaching staff and Brian Daboll in particular has spent a lot of time with Josh, and they really are trying to get in sync and on the same page. And Josh feels very comfortable going to this game. I'm sure it's going to be an abbreviated game plan. They're probably going to try to move the pocket a little bit with his athletic ability and get him out on the edge and try and give him some easy reads and easy completions to kind of get that confidence going and hope the defense plays really well.
With Steve Berline, who's got the call of the game on CBS on Sunday, I was going to ask you about that abbreviated playbook. Is there a percentage? I mean, how much of the playbook can they open up for Josh Allen this week? Is he dealing with 50% of it, 25%? What do you think?
It's hard to tell a percentage. What it is he's not going to have the same resources or the same depth of options as Tom Brady would have.
Sure.
And these are, we talk about some of the different quarterbacks that Brian Daboll has worked with over the years. With a young quarterback, he still doesn't understand NFL defenses yet at this point. So to put new packages offensively out there on the field, you've got to be able to understand how it applies to the defense and where the checks go and where the protection needs to turn and, what your first read is. And if they give you a different look, your first read is totally different depending on the defensive look that you get. That would overwhelm him at this point. Right now, I think they want to keep everything as simple as they can. They understand they've got to get the run game going. A lot of it's going to fall on Sean McCoy this week. The offensive line has to step up and take great care of him, give him the time to get through his reads. But it's not going to be a wide-open, air-it-out type of an attack.
Let's talk a little bit about the big picture. I made this assertion early in the week when we didn't know if he was actually going to get this call to start or if they were going to try and put Nate Peterman back out there and give him more time to watch. But I think once you make this move, and I've told this to Murph, and you understand where I'm coming from, I think you've got to support him. He stays out there unless he's hurt. He's got to stay in the game and learn. No matter as bad as it may go, you got to say, hey, we expected this. This is what you're okay. You got to get him through that and build him up enough to where he doesn't think he'll never get it.
I agree. I think that now the decision's made. this is the way it's got to be unless an injury occurs or unless it gets to the point where he is completely overwhelmed out there. That would be something that the coaches would have to identify and deal with at that point. But I don't think Josh is going to be that kind of a guy. I think that he has a lot of confidence in himself. Everybody that described him said the same thing. He's got a short memory. He's very tough-minded. He's intelligent. I think he knows he's going to make some mistakes, and he's going to get out there and just say, it's all part of the deal. Let's get out there and hope we don't make another
one. And that's critical, too. You got to say, listen, you don't expect to be great, but you do expect to get better, and you got to learn things. I keep going back to Peyton Manning telling me after in his second year when he's going 13-3 instead of his first year, he went 3-13. He said, I learned a lot of great football lessons in the fourth quarter, some bad football games my first year. And if you're going to sit him down every time things go bad, he'll never learn those lessons in the fourth quarter of bad football games.
Right.
You know, and
the reps.
So you got to kind of be willing to stand over there and just watch him, even if it is treading water. You know, you got to let him do it.
I agree. And that's the situation that this organization finds itself in. They traded up for him because they liked him, and they felt that he could be the quarterback for long term. Everybody, all the pundits, myself included, thought that he'd benefit from sitting for a year. It's a moot point now. The bottom line is he's out there on the field on Saturday. We all get to witness his first game, and hopefully one day down the road we'll look back and say, I was there when it all started, and what a great story it turned out to be.
I was there when Ben Roethlisberger started his first game.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the same thing.
Steve, we just have about 30 seconds left, but it strikes me that the bigger challenge for the Bills is on the other side of the ball, trying to slow down Los Angeles' offense.
Yeah, they're loaded. I mean, you look at what they did last week, and they just can keep throwing new receivers out there, and they've got two or three running backs that can hurt you, both running the ball between the tackles, getting to the edge in the passing game. They've got some playmakers out there, and then they brought back Antonio Gates for the red zone. They'll find a way to work him into the picture if they get into the red zone. So, yeah, a lot of skilled position players with a quarterback that knows how to work that package pretty effectively. So,
can the Bills beat them?
Can the Bills beat them? That's you're putting me on the spot.
Yes, in 10 seconds or less.
It can happen. Yes, it can happen. It's going to be the defense playing super, super well, and Josh Allen not making any mistakes.
Okay. Steve, thanks for this. Have a great broadcast with Tom McCarthy on Sunday. Thanks for being
We're looking
with us.
Forward to Good it. Stuff, Thank you, Steve. Guys.
Good to see you, man.
Steve Berline from the NFL on CBS joining us here in studio as we wrap it up on this Friday. Steve Tasker and I back Monday at 12 noon. Don't forget, Steve's got the Dolphins and the Jets. Steve Tasker, the Dolphins and the Jets on CBS this Sunday as well. And, of course, you can catch our game on the radio side coming up on Sunday at 1. I want to thank our production assistants, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rude, J.J. Torito, Kevin Cargis, James Roble, our producer, James Harris. That'll do it for us. We're back on Monday to recap the Bills and the Los Angeles Chargers. Monday, 12 noon to 3 p.m. right here, One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.